BoingBoing.net.
I'm speaking with John Higgs, the author of a biography about Timothy Leary called I Have America Surrounded, The Life of Timothy Leary. And thanks a lot for speaking with me, John.
No problem, Mark. It's a pleasure.
I appreciate you staying up late there in the UK.
On a Friday night as well.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to start out by saying that I really enjoyed reading the biography immensely.
Great.
Why don't you start just by telling me how you got interested in wanting to write a Leary biography in the first place?
Oh, okay. I'm 35 now. Mm-hmm. And around 1989 to 1992, I was doing a degree in computer science in Liverpool, and I first came across Leary for his book about chaos and cyberculture at that time. There's a lot of really interesting things in there, so it sort of stuck with me, and I never sort of viewed him as the 60s figure. I viewed him much more sort of contemporary than that. As the years went on, I got to know a guy who was very close to Leary when Leary was on the run in his fugitive years in, you know, Algeria and Switzerland, and I'd hear all these stories about Tim, and I'd just think, God, these are just such great stories. This is such an amazing life. You know, somebody should really write a book about this. I kept seeing mentions of Leary on the internet that were either wrong or the context of what happened had been lost, and people were sort of hung up on a few details and missing the sort of the bigger picture. And for years I was going, oh, someone should really write this book. It's the best story. I can't believe people are missing it. And in the end I just thought, oh, sod it, I'll go write it myself, you know.
Uh-huh. Leary has, obviously, you know, that he has his autobiography Flashbacks that he wrote in the 80s, and I'm sure you read that, but when did you come to the realization that it was loaded with what you described in the book as Irish facts, which Leary considered were better than real facts?
Probably about page one. I've got a soft spot for Flashbacks, and I know a lot of people have got a lot of criticism for it, and rightly so. You know, it is quite inaccurate, and he does desperately present himself in the most positive light, unrelentingly all the way through. But it's such a funny story that I still kind of like it.
Yeah, and that was, I think, one of the books that introduced me to the Eighth Circuit theory of the brain.
Does he go into that in Flashbacks?
A little bit.
Yeah, he skirts around it, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, or didn't he have that along with some of the chapter introductions, along with short biographies of people?
Yes, that's how he did, he did it. In fact, to be honest, it's in pretty much every book he wrote since the Politics of Ecstasy, anyway, in about 68, so I'd be surprised if it wasn't in that.
Yeah. What do you think it is about Leary that still has people fascinated, you know, 10 years after his death and you know?
It's a lot. Obviously, he's very important historically. I mean, it was Leary who got psychedelic drugs out from, you know, a small... a small group, and spread them to, you know, the mainstream, to like literally millions of people, to the extent that they began to influence, you know, mainstream culture in a way that, you know, drugs like, I don't know, DMT or ayahuasca or any other psychedelic drugs, they tend to remain quite small. They're not drugs like cocaine or marijuana or speed, which get quite popular because they're quite simple. People take them because they enjoy them. LSD is a lot, you know, is a much bigger deal than that, and it generally stays within small groups. And it was the fact that Leary pushed this that made it reach such a fertile time, and made it reach such a large audience. So he's interesting historically. He's interesting because he's basically he's such a trickster figure. There's so much humour around him, and you never quite know when he's serious. You can never quite know when you're supposed to take him seriously, or whether he's just having you on, or just completely mocking you know, everything around him. He seems to have hit a nerve, especially in America. You don't quite get it. I mean, I'm in Britain, and outside of America, you say Timothy Leary, and people just go, "Oh yeah, '60s guy," with a sort of smile. In America, it's a lot more baggage around the name Timothy Leary, and people have much more polarized sort of viewpoint on him. mainly because, I guess, he sort of symbolizes something that is quite deep and something that is quite profound in about, you know, life and reality and blah, 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 blah. So there's many, many layers in which he sort of works.
Do you think that you mentioned in the book William Burroughs predicted that 100 years from now cities are going to have statues of Leary, you know, in the Central Parks and stuff. Do you think that as time goes on, his importance as a generator of interesting ideas will come true?
Yeah, I think it was Oscar Jenniger who said it would be statues, but it was William Burroughs who said he wouldn't be recognised for 100 years. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think so. I mean, there's a cliche that a prophet is not recognised in his home country quite so much as elsewhere. And living outside of America, I do notice that Leary is given a lot more sort of credit, and his ideas are sort of taken on a deeper level, I think. I mean, in the book, I sort of toward the end, I make a point of making a parallel between the sort of emergence of this whole sort of postmodern world and the evolution of postmodern ideals coming from the LSD seed and things like that are sort of, you know, quite acceptable over here. I think the Times, when they reviewed my book, they started talking about Leary in those terms as a sort of a founder of postmodernism, and so a very important figure in, you know, in changing the modern world, the world we are in now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in America, I still think there's a lot more sort of anger that, you know, that he talked to the FBI, or, you know, that people feel he betrayed the hippies, or he just, you know, unleashed a tsunami of drug use, or whatever reason you could have for being against him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more personal in America. Outside, there's we're a bit more of a distance, so, you know, the personal hurts or whatever aren't quite so close, so we can just sort of look a bit more at the influence, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. Was there anybody that you wanted to talk to when you were doing your research that refused to talk to you?
No, nobody refused. There's a few people I would have loved to have talked to if I had more time.
Mm-hmm.
The whole book was written in a burst of about a year or 8 months, mm-hmm. even. And it was totally self-funded. I didn't have a publisher. I didn't have anything lined up. And I had so much money, and I knew I could get to America once and things like that. So I never got to speak to Ram Dass, which I'd have loved to do. But
mm-hmm.
I heard he was in... I heard a lot about his health. He's in Hawaii. And mm-hmm. I knew I could speak to Ralph Metzner, who was also at Harvard and Millbrook with Leary and Ram Dass at the time. So I didn't make the effort to see Ram Dass, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Leary, I've had a few emails with Zach Leary, Tim's stepson.
Mm-hmm.
But because I sort of concentrate on the fugitive years, I didn't speak to him at the time. He seems quite an interesting guy. I'd have liked to have spoken to more to him. But I mean, it's amazing how open all these people were. Names that I've read about for quite some time, and so they feel almost like historical figures, or, you know, people like, you know, Robert Anton Wilson, who have quite a reputation that you're quite in awe of, and you just, you know, you just give them a call, or and you find yourself going around to watch films at their house and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Timothy Leary estate was, you know, they just get this email from some strange guy in England saying, can I please come look at all Tim's stuff? And they're like, sure, yeah. And so welcoming and so kind, you know.
That's cool.
It was great.
Did you actually go up to Santa Cruz to meet with Robert Anton Wilson?
Oh, yes, I did on one night. Leary's... His archives, basically his entire life's possessions, in a lockup in the mountains north of Santa Cruz. So I spent a lot of time in there doing, from dawn to dusk for a couple of weeks, going through all his letters and his private possessions, his research. But while I was there, I was able to see Robert Anton Wilson,
mm-hmm.
Which is a personal high point for me, I think. And yeah, a lot of people around there and San Francisco and the whole sort of North California. There's a lot of people very connected to Leary.
Sure. So did you go up to Santa Cruz to talk to Michael Horowitz and Cynthia Palmer?
Yeah.
Or Petaluma, I mean.
Michael and Horowitz were in San Francisco when
mm-hmm.
I went to see.
Oh, okay.
And again, it was just so wonderful that I'd had an email or two with them, and I just sort of turned up at their house. And Michael just goes, all right, I've got very interested in these years that I'd mentioned to him. He just prepared, you know, boxes and boxes of, you know, the Berkeley Barb and all local papers from those years and just got them ready for me. And he just put me at a table and gave me these boxes and, you know, went out and just left me in his house while I was going through all these papers. You know, it's just such kindness from people. It was just incredible. It was researching Leary. There was no hardship at all. It was a joy.
That's cool. What about interviewing Leary's son, Jack? How was that?
I was always told from straight off that Jack wouldn't speak to me,
mm-hmm.
or wouldn't speak about Tim particularly. And I found a lot of really good interviews with him done about 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So I tended to rely on those,
mm-hmm.
for that period. I didn't get any material from Jack, unfortunately.
Oh, so he was somebody who didn't speak to you. That's interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't approached him, though. I mean, I was always told, don't try for Jack.
Uh-huh.
You know, he wouldn't speak.
And why do you think that is?
I mean, as I go into the book, I mean, you know, there's a lot of issues between Jack Leary and, mm-hmm. and his father. And you can see fairly clearly why, mm-hmm. from the way, you know, from their upbringing, Jack and Susan. It was not easy on them at all.
Yeah,
it was certainly far from a very idyllic or a very sort of a perfect childhood. Many was. I mean, their mother committed suicide when they were young, for mm-hmm. a start, even before, you know, the LSD thing.
Yeah,
or the communes and so forth.
And he was an absent father for a lot of their formative years.
Yes, he was a very, very hands-off father.
Yeah.
What we call now a bad father.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a bad father. He was certainly a great stepfather, a great godfather.
Mm-hmm.
In later years, when you know, the craziness had died down slightly.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt that he would not be the ideal person to be your father in the 1960s.
Yeah. You interviewed Rosemary and Joanna?
No, Rosemary died a few years ago, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I managed to get a few chapters of she'd written a memoir,
mm-hmm.
Which has not been published. The bulk of it seems to have gone missing, but I could find, managed to track down various chapters with various people.
Mm-hmm.
But Joanna, I spoke to a great length. Mainly because no one had actually spoken to her about it before. She was in the south of Spain. She still is in the south of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the stuff that had been written about Leary, in particular Acid Dreams, the book Acid Dreams, which is a great book, but it sort of quoted the sort of rumours or the stories on the street about Joanna, that she was... CIA sort of plant, that she had tricked Leary into being recaptured, and that she was doing everything to sort of, you know, damage his reputation and so forth, which I looked into quite a lot, and, you know, was pretty much rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
But it had, because no one had spoken to her, it had been repeated in book after book after book.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was very wary of speaking openly to people. Before long, I mean, I think we connected very, very deeply. And I think we talked over those periods at length. And I don't wish to quote for her, but I think us talking over those parts of her life when she was trying to get Tim out and Tim was speaking to the FBI and all of the, you know, the jail sequence, I think it did the world of good. She seems to have recovered a lot from that period.
Uh-huh.
Talking it through now, and she's a very interesting person. I'd strongly recommend, if you want to talk to her, interview her. She spoke briefly to Robert Greenfield about the other Leary book about 10
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She was in a very bad position. She had a lot of problems with alcohol and drugs, mm-hmm. and things like that. The way I tell her story in my book, I sort of leave off when she's at a very, very sort of down point, and I sort of felt slightly that I betrayed her as a bit of a victim, you know,
mm-hmm.
a bit of a tragic case. But to speak to her now... is a lot more rewarding. I mean, she's really turned her life around, and she's really become a lot more of a selfless person. That was a loving person, which would probably surprise a lot of people who read her story.
Yeah. What is she doing now?
Oh, she does a few websites and things. There's one, futureprimitive.org, I think it is, and one called Metahistory. And she does a lot of podcasts. She, I don't know if you know the 13 Grandmothers. It's a sort of a global sort of, I don't know what you'd call it. I was going to say cabal, but that sounds sort of witchy and dark, but a meeting of female elders from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
She's been interviewing a lot of these sort of, you know, Native American shaman and so forth for her website. So she's very much into that sort of scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Just to wrap it up, what would you say is Leary's most important contribution to the world, the one that he'll be remembered for 100 years from now?
What will Leary be remembered for 100 years from now? I suppose the real answer to that is it was Leary who was responsible for the idea that I guess there's more to reality than meets the eye, reached a mainstream audience. The idea that, you know, your personal reality that you live in and what you see around you and what feels real and solid to you can be quite different between different people. And it's not a new idea. It's, you know, from the dawn of time, people like Plato and so forth have been talking about this. But Leary was the guy who showed almost empirically to millions of people at the same time that it was valid, that it had merit and was a genuine phenomena. From then we now live in this, you know, strange, chaotic, confusing postmodern world that's very, very different to the sort of almost what seems almost black and white world of the 1950s now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Lee was a figurehead of something, and to ascribe everything to him is to undermine the efforts of, you know, many, many people in such a turbulent and interesting time like the 60s. But history has a habit of fingering, you know, one person to sort of sum up an era or to view as a key sort of a changer in an era. And I think it's from the 60s, I think it's probably Leary.
Mm-hmm. So I've been speaking with John Higgs. He's the author of I Have America Surrounded, The Life of Timothy Leary, and it's being published by Friday Books in the UK and Barricade Books in the United States. Thank you very much, John. I really appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure, Mark.
And good luck with your book.
Thank you.
BoingBoing.net.